Indeed, the fact that it is such a badly written book may be the sign that its appeal rested on something more important than its prose. It gave form to an idea whose time had come. Crowley was a quiet man who'd grown up with noisy parents. His mother was one of America's first female syndicated columnists and a dedicated feminist. His father was a successful journalist and editor whose friends dubbed him the Great Suggester. Their home was something of a European island in New York, according to one historian. The most interesting thing about the senior Crowley, if by interesting you mean really loopy, was his obsession with Auguste Comte, a semi-mystical French philosopher whose biggest claim to fame was his coinage of the word sociology. Comte argued that humanity progressed in three stages, and that in the final stage mankind would throw off Christianity and replace it with a new religion of humanity, which married religious fervor to science and reason, even to the extent of making saints out of such figures as Shakespeare, Dante, and Frederick the Great. Comte believed that the age of mass industrialization and technocracy would pluck the human mind from the metaphysical realm for good, ushering in an age where pragmatic managers would improve the plight of all based upon man-made morality. He anointed himself the high priest of this atheistic, secular faith, which he called positivism. The elder Crowley made his Greenwich Village home into a positivist temple, where he held religious ceremonies for select guests whom he would try to convert. In 1869, young Herbert became the first and probably last American to be christened in Comte's religion. Crowley attended Harvard University, though due to family and personal problems, he was absent for long stints. While there, he studied closely under William James, as well as Josiah Royce and George Santayana. From James, he learned to think pragmatically. Thanks to Royce, he converted from positivism to progressive Christianity. Santayana persuaded him of the need for a national regeneration in a new socialistic aristocracy. The result of all these influences was a brilliant young man who was capable of remarkable hard-headedness while never losing his mystical zeal. He was also a fascist. Or at least he was an exponent of a pre-fascist worldview that would seem prescient just a few years later. When reading about Herbert Crowley, one often finds phrases such as, "Crowley was no fascist, but..." Yet few make the effort to explain why he was not a fascist. Most seem to think it's simply self-evident that the founder of the New Republic could not have been a disciple of Mussolini's. In reality, however, almost every single item on a standard checklist of fascist characteristics can be found in the Promise of American Life. The need to mobilize society like an army? Check. Call for spiritual rebirth? Check. Need for great revolutionary leaders? Check. Reliance on manufactured, unifying national myths? Check. Contempt for parliamentary democracy?